Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get it!
Welcome to the war room. We got Dez, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Roll with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26 or the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
What?
It's party time.
Yes, it is. What up, good people? And happy Cinco de Mayo to all our Mexican hermanos y hermanas. Welcome once again to another edition of your favorite sports show. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and alongside me at the War Room Roundtable is Jimmy Williams, B. Austin, and Akil Bayon. Welcome back, Brother Bay. What's going on?
What's up?
Good?
Yes, sir. Let's go.
I'm going to do this. All right. Our man PJ is still on hiatus, but he should be back to the table soon. Tonight, we're going to talk about the NBA playoffs, the Pac-Man Sugar Shane fight, our thoughts on the NFL draft, and even the death of Osama bin Laden. We're going to get political on y'all tonight. But before we get into that, we'll be rapping with Rob Parker of ESPN's First Take about his thoughts on some of those topics. And in the second hour, it's party time. Because we're going to be talking some hip-hop and sports with hip-hop reporting artist Tracy Lee. If you're a loyal listener, you know the drill. We want to hear from you guys, so when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline, call in and holler at your boys. That number is 323-410-0012. The JW Philly Realty chat room is open right now on our Blog Talk Radio page, so get in there and join the conversation. We want to give a shout-out to our brothers Roy and Chris before we get started. Our fellas from over on the Broad Street line catch them Wednesdays at 6 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. Their show is Real Fun Sports, so check them out. And if you're on an Android or iPhone, don't forget to grab our War Room Sports mobile app from the App Store market. It's free for now, so don't miss out. So before we get into the birthdays, we're going to let one of tonight's special guests tell y'all a little bit about himself.
Yeah, a lot of y'all don't know me. So let me formally introduce myself. You dig? Yo, I'm verbally established. Vocals are loco. Words are well crafted. A flow virtuoso. Virtually untouchable. Boy, is you kidding in the booth? I'm a monster on the boards like Blake Griffin. Praise made different. For one, this ain't scripted. Just mention my name like credit it gains interest. Lives get
inspired. It's my birthday. Yeah. It's birthday time. All right, fellas, y'all ready to get into these birthdays?
Yes, sir.
All right, birthdays are brought to you, as always, by Days of Beauty Hair Salon in Fort Washington, Maryland. Go get your wig split quickly. All right, first birthday today, turning 31, is an NBA wash, in my opinion, Mr. DeMar Johnson.
My birthday, yay!
Bayon, what do you think of when I say the name DeMar Johnson?
I think of lottery pick bust. That was he was supposed to be really good. He was from the D.C. area. He was actually supposed to be, I guess, what Joe Johnson is now, but it never really panned out.
Yeah, that didn't work out too much for him because Joe Johnson is filthy rich. Jimmy, DeMar Johnson.
Yo, I think of a young man who smacked his whip and damn near paralyzed himself.
Yeah.
And as soon as he smacked his whip, he pretty much ended his career at that point.
Yo, I kind of forgot about that until you brought that up. I mean,
yeah,
I think
he smacked his wrist, and that's when he got hurt. Yeah, he never come back strong after that.
I kind of think he was already on his way to bust him, but that definitely ended his career.
He sped it up. No pun intended.
Definitely. B. Austin, what you think?
I think about the fact that I've played with DeMar Johnson more at run and shoot than I've actually seen him play in the NBA. I also think about the fact that he used to give his young boy Bobby Mays too much money, and Bobby used to walk around counting DeMar's money and run and shoot at the gym. Go figure. I don't
tell the people he was AI at the club.
Yo, how y'all, and, how y'all on national radio name dropping the killing dude?
Yeah, because we keep it 100.
And that?
Keep it 100.
That's how we do it. All right.
And I didn't realize the Bull was 31. But go ahead.
It's over for him. The next birthday is one of Brad, one of B. Austin's favorites, his spiritual leader, wide receiver Mushin Muhammad, turns 38 today. B. Austin, what's up with your man Mushin?
Yo, man, he should have had at least 4 or 5 more Pro Bowls. He was better than McNabb. I know he plays wide receiver, but I don't care. Mushin, shout out. Salaam alaikum, good brother. I'm done.
But he was playing with an overrated quarterback too. Jake the homie is trash to me. Always have been. But Jimmy,
always
Mushin Muhammad.
Yo, I think Mushin was a solid receiver, solid citizen, and he got a mean sartorial game. He be killing it with the suit game.
Bayon.
Yo, solid receiver. I remember him tearing it up in the Super Bowl. And, yo, he has the same first name as my pop's middle name.
Mushin. All right, we're going to skip. We're going to flip the order on these last two. We're going to go first with LaPhonso Ellis, who turns 41 years old.
My birthday, yay!
Jimmy, what do you think of when you think of LaPhonso Ellis?
Yo, I think of basketball back in the day, and my man had a nice little medium-range jump shot, which is now extinct. And he was built like a damn bird.
Yo, he
like
always
a bird.
Had like a he always had like a little baby face, looking like with the boy B.J. Armstrong that we murked.
Yo,
you know who
he was? He before
like
his time. He was a what's the boy that played for the Magic that got traded in the trade for Gilbert?
Rashard
the wingman.
Rashard.
They had similar games.
Yeah, Gizzo Rashard. Kill. LaPhonso.
Yo, I remember him like, and when Denver upset the Sonics in that 8-1 game back in the day, and him dunking and like screaming, and he making like the Wanda face, like Jamie Foxx playing Wanda type face.
It's Wanda joint. B. Austin, LaPhonso Ellis.
At a certain point, Mr. Ellis realized that he wasn't going to be a superstar and probably wasn't even going to make stardom, but he wanted his own sneaker deal. So he went to Kmart and signed that deal and got his own sneakers. That's what I remember.
LaPhonso had a Kmart deal?
Yeah, he had a Mart deal.
Yeah, I didn't even
know that. Shout out to him.
I didn't even know LaPhonso was built like that, even though it was just Kmart. All right, so I saved the best for last, man. Turning 40 today is y'all man, none other than Baby Jordan, Harold Miner.
My birthday.
Kill. Harold Miner.
Harold Miner, I mean, he was such a disappointment, man. I mean, he won a dunk contest. He had handles. He had a bald head. He was MJ's complexion, an inch shorter. But he was garbage.
He was some truck juice.
That's
Jimmy
it.
Harold Miner. Where you at,
Jim? Do it in the game.
I'm right here, champ. Yo, Harold Miner, yo. Yo, what I remember about Harold Miner, both, of course, the whole Baby Jordan thing and the comparisons to Mike, which were, like, unfair to him. But I remember, like, back in the day, playing Little League, when the homie used to get to the foul line and then, like, take the ball and go around his waist with it. And I remember everybody, you know what I'm saying, Little League trying to do that same thing because Cash really thought he was the next one. Unfortunately not.
Baby Jordan never grew up. Awesome.
Yo. I'm going to poop on myself right now. I'm such a Mike stan that I drank the Kool-Aid on Harold Miner, and I thought that he was going to be something. But contrary to Kill's opinion, dude was not skilled. He didn't have that much handle. He was only 6'4". He was left-handed, and he could not get right. He couldn't do – he couldn't even write.
Hold on. He was in college, yo. Don't get it twisted. Like, in college, he was –
you're just saying he's Stacey Augmon then. He wasn't Baby Jordan. He was Baby Augmon.
No, he had a better J than that.
Stacey Augmon.
He just straight up dissed the boy. Like, the boy wasn't nice in college. That comes from your love of Fed. That's what it is.
Nah, brother. Yo, there was a lot of nice people in college. Scottie Thurman was that dude in college. Carmelo Travieso and Edgar Padilla were them dudes in college. What'd that mean?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But sometimes it doesn't translate to the league. But he did have skills, but he didn't have skills at the highest level.
I disrespected Glenn Rice for about 3 seasons and thought that Harold Miner was better than Glenn Rice. Come on, man.
But see, now you was drinking. You wasn't even better than him in college.
Yeah, he's off that yak. He was off that yak. But that's your birthdays for the day. Jimmy's going to let all y'all know what happened this week while y'all were on the grind.
Let's go. Some stories I want to talk about that happened while you were on the grind. Number one is Dave Dorson. Dave Dorson, you remember Dave Dorson that committed suicide but didn't shoot himself in the head because he wanted to have his brain examined and, you know, come to find out that he had some serious issues. What do you think this is going to do for football? I mean, because at this point, it's like player after player, upon retirement,
people,
is having serious head issues.
I'll give people some background on the story because Akil talked about this a few shows back.
Yeah, he definitely did.
Yeah, so they diagnosed him as having brain damage. They said he has a chronic traumatic encephalopathy. I don't know if I'm saying that right. But it's been identified in about two dozen deceased NFL players, and also the wrestler Chris Benoit, who went crazy before he died and killed his family. I think it's the same thing they found in Dirty Waters too, right, Kill?
Yeah, same thing, Roger Waters. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so Dorson, they said since he didn't shoot himself in the head and left a note for them to actually study his brain, he's basically a martyr now. You know, he's going to be. He martyred himself because he recognized the symptoms before his death, and now, you know, by having the doctors do research on his brain, you know, he might help a whole lot of cats out. So, Kill, I know this is a big issue for you, so what'd you think about this?
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to the author and guy I read and listen to a lot, Dr. Daniel Heyman, and he just recently had Terry Bradshaw on his website, just talking about Terry Bradshaw's own depression problems and brain problems from playing football, and it's just something that I know as a parent, you know, as much as I love football, and you know, I'm like, yo, I wouldn't let my son play only because, you know, the average lifespan is 53 now for NFL players, where the average lifespan of everybody else is 78. Is 78. So, you know, they're knocking off almost two decades of life. And it's just sad where it's going. But now we're seeing the after effect with all the technology of, like, wow, you know, maybe we shouldn't be ramming our craniums, you know, into each other at 20 miles an hour. You know what I mean?
Hey, Kill, actually, the fact that you brought that up, Chris Benoit, you remember his story, right? He basically killed all of his kids, killed his wife, killed himself. And, I mean, it's crazy that they said repeated blows to the head can cause brain damage that will give you these suicidal thoughts. And that's like three people that we know of who's committed suicides because of this brain disease. It's crazy.
Yeah, it has been said that the average NFL starter in an NFL game goes through the equivalent of seven major car crashes.
Damn.
Sheesh.
In a game.
Well, that's crazy. Yeah, I definitely remember Chris Benoit as well as a lot of other players.
Yo, Ray Lewis and Brian Dawkins are my heroes.
Yeah. Well,
okay. Yo, but that being, you know, I was waiting for his next statement. He just stopped right there. But yo, that's very sad. I want to know what's going to happen, like, long term with the game of football. I mean, you know, like you said, it happened to Chris Benoit too, who's wrestling. But you know, after he left the Four Horsemen, I ain't like him anyway. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah,
but,
boxers. They said boxers developed it too.
Did you hear about the guys in the NFL now who are like cheating on their baseline concussion exams? So if they really get one, you know, they won't look like they lost. You know, they won't really look like they're out of it because their score was already kind of low. So dudes are like basically tanking their baseline concussion exams so they won't miss
games. Come on, man. I guess at this point, it's like, you know, this is what you sign on for. You know what you sign on for. So, you know, if cats are going to do that, then, you know, come on, man. They get what's coming to them. If that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know what I mean? Anyway, let's move on to the next story because that irritated me right there. Let's talk about Derrick Rose and him winning the MVP as well as his coach winning the Coach of the Year. I'm going to get you guys' thoughts on that. Dr. Bay, hold off for a second because you're the resident Chicago Bulls fan. We'll save you for last.
What did you guys think about Derrick Rose as well as his coach winning these awards? And also, did you see his acceptance speech, Dev?
Yeah, I mean, towards the stretch run of the season, you know, I had changed my pick from midseason of LeBron to Derrick Rose. So I think he's very deserving of it. I think Thibodeau deserved the coach of the year, too, from, you know, what he did with the Bulls this year. But, of course, you know, I would have given it to Collins over in Philly. But the acceptance speech was crazy, man. You know, Derrick just looked at his mom and had that serious, I love you, like, what would I do without you type look on his face. And
yeah, man, I had me looking at the ceiling for a minute. I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah. You definitely had to look up at the ceiling on that one.
He's like the anti LeBron in that sense. Like, you know, this dude is doing everything right to. But then he's always been humble. Let's see how he comes back next year after being an MVP for a year. He might come back as a changed person.
Oh, hey, real quick, but, for Austin and Kill, real quick, my man Brian Benjamin, he's the U.S. head of the Seeds Foundation. They do a lot of stuff with basketball over in Africa. I was talking with him yesterday, and he actually reminded me that Derrick Rose has just won the MVP while still under his rookie contract. Come on, yo.
Yeah, that's crazy. And also didn't he win Rookie of the Year as well?
Yeah,
one Rookie of the Year.
Shout out to the Seeds Foundation. We're going to have them on in a later show. But it'd be Austin.
Oh, that's a good look. Go ahead, Austin. What's your opinion on Derrick Rose and his coach winning these awards?
First, Tom Thibodeau, I think he deserved it with all the injuries that they have to deal with through the season and really not having the most talented or skilled bunch. I mean, they're not bums, don't get me wrong, but I think that Thibodeau did a tremendous job. Derrick Rose is proof that no matter how much BS you have going on in the world, how much is perpetrated by the media and all of this, yo, the cream will always rise to the top. And I just feel, you know, I feel great for the dude. He's humble. He's hungry. He wants to be great. And it's about the game for him, and it's about appreciating where he's come from and how far he's come and giving thanks to those that have helped him get there. And so I just appreciate that young man, yo. I really do.
Absolutely.
I'm even more of a fan now having seen that acceptance speech. And, you know, that's no knock to LeBron, because I think he's had a tremendous season as well. And he comes from, you know, humble and meager beginnings. But it's just amazing how Derrick Rose has maintained that connection with where he comes from in a positive way to inspire him to do great things as opposed to
And D. Howard.
They come from similar socioeconomic backgrounds, but the difference is LeBron's mom is like 3 years older than him. You know what I'm saying? So they like grew up together. And you see LeBron spends time trying to keep her out of trouble. So, you know, to all you parents out there, every decision you make affects your kids. You know, you can see it right there. He's a very humble guy, and you can't help but to like him more after seeing that acceptance speech. Dr. Bay, you're the last one I want to talk to about because you're the resident Bulls fan. What's your opinion on everything?
Yo, as a Bulls fan, I mean, I'm pleasantly surprised that we got the number one seed with 62 wins. I'm surprised at the job that Thibodeau did. I'm surprised that Derrick Rose got the MVP. And so for me, it's kind of all surreal. But one thing I noticed that, you know, as you all alluded to earlier, each time injuries happen, like Thibodeau had the team just rolling and rolling. We kept winning. And the Bulls, they actually have, I heard this a while ago, that they have the most role-oriented team where everyone knows their role and doesn't step out of their role, which, you know, I think as a coach, a first-year rookie coach, it's hard to get guys to buy into. Like, you see Korver coming in. All he does is shoot threes, that's it. He's not doing anything else. Brewer comes in. He does everything except shoot the ball. You know, Noah comes in. All he does is rebound, plays D. He doesn't even try to post up and get buckets. And then they just kind of, you know, they let Ding. He plays inside, outside. Bogans averages like 4 points a game. He's just a two that, you know, doesn't really hurt you, and he's a facilitator. And then he just get the ball to Rose and get out of his way. With Derrick Rose, it's funny because as I'm watching him play, he won the MVP, but you can still see holes in his game. Like, you can still see he still goes too fast sometimes. He doesn't change his directions. He doesn't, use certain intricacies that you see Darren Williams or Chris Paul or Jason Kidd use or Steve Nash. You're like, wow, if he's winning this now, imagine where he's going to be in 4 or 5 years if he keeps this development process. So, yeah, shout out to him.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, real quick. Blake Griffin won unanimous rookie of the year. That's no surprise to anyone, so we really don't have to comment on that because who else were they going to give it to? last one, it's just in this evening. Gary Williams from one of Dev's alma maters, Maryland, has decided to call it quits. What's your thoughts on this? What do you think his legacy is? Gary Williams, in my opinion, always gets overshadowed being in the ACC, but if you look at it, he has the third most wins behind Coach K and Dean Smith, so he puts in work. What's your guys' opinion
of
this?
Be real quick because we're running a little behind. Real quick, Gary Williams to me is a great coach. I think in the ACC he's done the most with the least amount of talent. And that leads me into my next thing. I think he's a terrible recruiter.
Yeah.
Every good player in the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area, he never gets them. You know, he doesn't get the best ones. I mean, he gets some good ones. And you know, yesterday Jordan Williams – declared officially for the draft, and then this comes. I was telling people today that I hope that his decision didn't come because of the departure of Jordan Williams, because he might not even get drafted in the first round. But wish Gary well. I wish him well.
Yeah.
He's a great
so, how soon before we start hearing the Shaka rumors of Maryland? Because although Shaka State, that's a bigger program, and is in his backyard.
Man, when I heard the report, that's the first thing I said.
The first thing you thought of, too?
Shaka should have waited. I'm like, I told y'all Shaka should have waited.
Oh,
he can still roll, though.
Yo.
Still
anyway, man, that's what happened while y'all were on the drive.
Hold up. Let me add one thing.
Uh-huh.
Hey, real quick, I want to add something to what Doug was saying. And, you know, having coached in the D.C. area and in the WCAC, you know, I know you see JT3, you see Georgetown, you see George Mason. You saw all the area schools and even other schools at the WCAC games or in the D.C. games in the trenches, and you never saw anybody from Maryland. And a part of it was I heard that Gary Williams kind of had beef with some of the top Maryland AAU teams that will remain nameless. And because of that, those AAU coaches – we're kind of like, if you want to be like that, then don't expect to get any of our players. So that's what hurt Gary Williams in the recruiting aspect because he didn't think he needed AAU programs. But as we know, AAU dominates. So.
And Gary Williams didn't want to give any money handshakes out. Shout out to him for not giving out money handshakes. Go ahead,
let's pass the rock real quick, man. Today, I'm just going to inbound and get out the way. I'm going to wait in the corner. If y'all need me, y'all got me. But kill you up.
All right, I'm going to be brief, so good evening, War Room family. I wanted to take the time to talk about an interesting observation from the NBA playoffs and some contractual information. As we all know, the Atlanta Hawks are playing my Chicago Bulls in the second round of the NBA playoffs with the series tied at 1-1. Now, my observation is how Joe Johnson was able to get the Atlanta Hawks to give him $20 million per year over the next 6 years during last summer's free agency period, while his teammate Jamal Crawford has made half of that in the last year of his current NBA contract when he signed with the Bulls and was subsequently traded to the New York Knicks. Now, during their careers, Crawford has averaged 15 points per game, while Joe Johnson has averaged 17 points per game. This season, Crawford has averaged 15 points per game and 30 minutes off the bench, while Joe Johnson has averaged 18 points per game and 36 minutes as a starter. During the 2011 playoffs, Crawford is averaging 20 points per game, 3 assists, and 2 rebounds, while Joe Johnson is averaging 20 points per game, 3 assists, and 6 rebounds. Crawford's NBA efficiency during the playoffs this year is 15.7. And Joe Johnson's efficiency during the playoffs this year is 17.1. The only other difference is Crawford is 6'5", 200, and Johnson is 6'7", 235, to go with a one-year age difference. Now, this summer, Jamal Crawford will become a free agent like Joe Johnson was last summer. Do you think he can go to the Hawks front office and ask for $15 million per year over the next 5 years? Since Joe got $20 million per year over the next 6 years. For some reason, I think they're going to offer my man about maybe $7 million per year, if that, to try to keep him in Atlanta. And with an NBA lockout looming, we will see how this all works out. but I just wanted to share with you all my observations. And with that, I will throw a bounce pass to Jimmy, a.k.a. The Blueprint, a.k.a. Spike Tarantino. Go check our YouTube page.
Yo. Doc Bay, that's a great observation. You know, there's no way they're going to pay that young man. But like you said, when you look at their efficiency, I mean, he's right there with Joe Johnson, but Joe Johnson committed a robbery without a gun. Now, I'm going to be very brief. What's up, Warren World? This is Jimmy, a.k.a. The Blueprint, a.k.a. The Richest Man in Babylon. And this week, I want to talk about Mr. Newton being a first-round pick and now becoming a professional football player. There are many out there who are critical of you being selected in the first round, and they also don't believe you will be a productive professional football player. I personally believe you have a great chance to be productive as a pro, and even if you're not, guess what? Your team will benefit from your popularity. Let's face it, you're one of the most popular guys in your profession already. Your father has received criticism, and you just continued to work on your game to the point where you became a first-round draft pick. I just want to congratulate you and wish you the best of luck with your pro career. If you continue to put the work in, you will have success, and maybe one day we will see you in the NFL. Oh, for those who are confused, I'm speaking to Cecil Newton Jr., the older brother of Cam Newton, who was just drafted in the first round by the Hartford Colonials in the USL. Oh, by the way, shout out to Cam, too. I'm nice. And with that, I see my man B. Austin cutting, so I hand him the rock.
War Room World, this your man Stokely Brad Michael, Bradledge Cleaver, a.k.a. BFK, a.k.a. Al-Hajj Malik Al-Shabazz, a.k.a. I'm still the educated brother from the back. My fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride, love, and sincerity that I present this PTR to you as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation. This week, Pittsburgh Steelers running back Rashard Mendenhump, yeah, the guy that was caught having sex with Ben Just Give It Here, Don't Say Nothing, Rothley's Get the Burger, went ahead and nobly, courageously, and with conviction, fell on his own sword, pause, and signed the death warrant of his career by reaching into his heart with his mind and pulling out these candid, profound, and incendiary words. What kind of person celebrates death? It's amazing how people can hate a man they have never even heard speak. We've only heard one side. And with that, the crowd went wild. Out for blood, hang him high. Let me first just say that while I agree with his candor and his right to free speech, hell, most of y'all that know me know that I even agree with his sentiments. One must take a catalog of the things one has to lose in the court of public opinion when using Twitter. It's not about whether or not what you're saying makes sense. It's about the fact that 80% of the world are blind, deaf, and dumb, and mostly intrigued by the drum. And so they will not use intellect or death to analyze your words. They will take them as far as their limited perspective and truncated intellect will allow them to. And kaboom, the Twitterverse does the rest. As you hang by your proverbial neck, by the cords of misinterpretation, knee-jerk overreaction, self-righteous ignorance, and prideful, unjust condemnation. So, think before you press enter on that tweet, and if it's worth it to you, then go for it. Because I, like most of the minority who understood Mendenhump's position, applaud him for speaking out. And that's enough about the idiots in Twitter and the court of public opinion. The real matter at hand is the celebration of death. What's changed from the day before our president's announcement of Osama bin Laden's death? Not a damn thing. A martyr has been created. Al-Qaeda is still around, and they're probably out for blood a lot worse than they were with him here. Anywho, who is a spiritual person? Anyone who's a spiritual person, whether it's from an Abrahamic religion such as Christianity, Islam, or Judaism, or whatever, whether you read the Quran, the Torah, or even the Bible, nowhere is it correct to hate. Nowhere is it correct to spread terror. Nowhere is it correct to celebrate death. The people of New York and D.C. suffered through one of the most horrific publicized incidents in history. But hasn't there been enough death? To be completely real with y'all, I'm going to share the words of my brother, Devin Mack. This is only justice because this is what we Americans deem it to be. Do y'all know how many innocent civilians America has killed over the decades that we've occupied the Middle East? I'm not defending these jackasses, but things like 9/11 don't happen just because someone woke up one day and picked America out of a hat to attack. So they retaliate against decades of us killing their innocent people in the name of democracy, quote unquote. But then when they retaliate, which is also wrong according to their religion, we deem them terrorists because it isn't done by a government. Those dudes aren't anything more or less than militia groups, and just like us, they deem these acts a justice for the things we've been doing to them for years. I guarantee y'all that our civilian body count dwarfs what they did on 9/11. Everybody is wrong in this situation. Everybody. And if you call yourself Christian, Muslim, Jew, or anything else for that matter, it is wrong to celebrate someone's murder. It is wrong to celebrate death, no matter how you slice it. I'm done.
And the crowd goes wild. Yup, that's what I said. That's what I said. All right, real quick, because we got our guests on the line, so we're going to tell you guys how you can get in touch with us real quick before we bring Rob on. You can check out our website at warroomsports.com. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. If you'd like to send an email to one of us personally, all of our individual email addresses are also on that page. Join our Facebook page at facebook.com/warroomsports. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/warroomsports. Subscribe to and friend our YouTube channel at warroomsportstv.com. For access to all of our media content in one place, anywhere, anytime, download the War Room Sports mobile app on your Android or Apple device. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. You can join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/the War Room. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. While you're at it, follow us, friend us, and favorite us to make the War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get updates and reminders about the show. Speaking of blogs, check out ours, All Fair in Sports and War, on the blog tab of our website. Please subscribe to our iTunes podcast so you can listen to the show anytime on your own device. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. To call in and speak to us, just dial the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Press the 1 is like raising your hand, and who knows, we might just get to you. But we're going to bring our guests on the line right now. You've all heard him here before. He's a favorite here in the War Room. You've seen him on ESPN's First Take, arguing with the likes of Skip Bayless and the rest of those guys. And he writes for ESPNNewYork.com. Welcome back into the War Room, Rob Parker. What's up, Rob?
What's happening? How you guys doing tonight?
Pretty good.
Rob,
good.
How are you?
Rob, what's up, man?
Everything is
what's
great.
What's up, Rob?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Rob, I want to start it off. This is Jimmy, by the way. I just want to ask you a quick question. What everybody is talking about, the Celtics and the Lakers both, my preseason picks, there that goes, they find themselves in 2-0 holes, and the Thunders and Bulls have lost the home court advantage. So what's your opinion of the playoffs thus far?
It's been surprising so far. Not so much the Miami-Boston. I mean, I know a lot of people are making a big deal out of that. I just have to wait to see when the Celtics come home how they play. I know they didn't play great in Miami, but I expected Miami to hold court, home court, you know, and win games there. So that wasn't that shocking to me. The Lakers is the most shocking thing I've seen because, and not even game one, you know, game two where they know they can't really afford to lose another home game and come out with a lackluster performance like they had last night. That was kind of surprising. So you know, and then the same thing, the Bulls. I haven't been buying the Bulls all year. It's Derrick Rose and a lot of other guys. Carlos Boozer obviously must – that turf toe must really be bad because he looks really bad. And then the Thunder and Memphis, you know, I mean, it's just a little different talking about the Oklahoma City and Memphis, but they got good teams and they got good young players, you know. So it's,
yeah.
it's been a different kind of playoff so far.
Okay.
Right, so,
okay.
So this is Devin, Rob. So that's what you think of the playoffs so far. So while we're standing here with all the series where they are, how do you actually think it's going to shake out? Like, what are your predictions? Who's going to represent the East? Who's going to represent the West? And who's going to win that trophy this year?
You know what? Unless Pau Gasol is hurt or there's something there that I don't understand because he's playing like he's hurt, like something's wrong with him. He's a much better player than he's played last year. In the playoffs, he had 20-11. He averaged 20-11. This year's 14-8, and I'm talking about a bad 14-8. So I still like the Lakers, and I still like Boston. I still think those two teams could wind up there. I know everybody thinks it's crazy because they're both down 0-2, but I still think both of those teams can make it. I know they're older, and I know they're banged up, and I don't trust Dallas. I mean, obviously, I give Miami a better shot. Than Dallas. I'm not a big Dallas fan. I've seen this team choke before. Don't forget the NBA Finals in 2005. They won the first two games in Miami and never won another game. So I'm not that sold on Dallas yet.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, Dirk, I mean, he has a history, you know, and he has a reputation for kind of laying down in big situations. But at this point, Dirk is looking a little unstoppable. I mean, it's the matchups, but
yeah.
But
the only thing I would say about that is, if the Lakers and even the Celtics had played well and lost, then I would buy more into it. I just don't think either of them played well. I remember the same thing happened in the Boston Knicks series. Everybody said, "Oh, Boston, you know, the Knicks could have won the first two games." Well, Boston really didn't play well at all in those two games. And I said they had a good game in them, and they came to New York for game three, and they blew the Knicks out right out of the box. So I'm just saying if the Celtics play a good game and lose in Boston, obviously it's over. If the Lakers play a good game and get beat, you know, then I'll say it's over. But those teams haven't played up to their potential. If they both play up to their potential, there's going to be seven-game series.
And then you got Ron Artest being suspended for Game 3, so that's going to be a hurdle the Lakers have to jump over. So,
yeah, it will be. I think it's kind of lame. I mean, I know it's the end of the game and it didn't look good, but I didn't think he got thrown out the game. You know, it's so sensitive in the NBA. You can't do anything. I don't think it was that terrible. He didn't have a cold hand. I just think that David Stern sometimes goes overboard with that stuff. He got thrown out the game. That's enough. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, David Stern being the dictator.
I think he felt the pressure to do it because it seemed like everybody was reporting this morning, like, yeah, Ron Artest probably should be thrown out for game three. And then you know how he probably hears all the time that they may have a Laker bias. He probably did it just from the pressure, and he shouldn't have done it. But,
nope, I agree. Shouldn't have been done, but. Who knows? You know, that stuff is always fishy to me anyway.
We got a fellow conspiracy theorist in the house. We agree. Rob, this is Brad. Just to change gears a little bit, the NFL draft just happened. What are your thoughts on Cam Newton being taken with the first pick overall?
I was glad to see it. I think he deserved to be the first pick. When you play that well in college, win a national championship, and do the things. And this wasn't like some undersized guy or some guy who, you know, you really question whether or not he had the stature to play in the league. I don't think that was the issue. And most of the stuff that they talked about, the off-the-field kind of stuff, that's all nonsense to me. Can the guy play? He can play. Can he shake off linebackers and linemen and make a play downfield? Does he have a big arm? I just think if he would have got passed up, that would have been a slap in the face to everything that he accomplished in major college football. And I think he deserves that. The way that they give guys the benefit of the doubt, white quarterbacks, I just think that he should have been the number one pick, and I'm glad he was.
Oh, good point. Good point. I think that he definitely deserved to be the first quarterback taken. I thought the quarterback class overall was kind of weak, so I thought maybe there should have been another position drafted at that number one spot, but there's a bias towards quarterbacks anyway. So.
They needed a quarterback, though. You know what I mean? You're talking about a team
that
really needed a quarterback, so it only made sense. And if you pass up on a guy like that and he winds up being, you know, a big-time player in the league, it'll be crazy to pass up when you need a quarterback. Jimmy Clausen, it was pretty obvious that guy is not going to be good enough to do the job, right? So I think they made the right decision.
Yeah.
Hey, Rob, this is a kill. Hey, I have one for you. Which teams positively stood out to you with their overall draft?
You know what? I never really get into that because I'm still waiting for the day when one team says that they didn't have a good draft. Because it's all propaganda. I hear the same stories every year on the draft, and the same thing that the draft experts always tell you. If a team picks some of the guys that they had up high, those are the teams that they say had great drafts because it makes them look better in making these selections. So I really don't pay attention to that stuff because I've heard it all. I've seen so many buzz, so many people tell me this guy's going to be great and, oh, what a great draft. I've heard it in Detroit with the Lions forever. Oh, the Lions got so many good playmakers. And I read guys in Sports Illustrated who picked them to win 10 games. And I don't even want to say who it was, but I read, I think it was in Sports Illustrated, the Lions are going to have a breakout season and win 10 games, and they wind up going 0-16 that year. So much of that stuff is just propaganda and people trying to step out and predict or say something so that they could come back and say, I told you they had this and that. And I think most people really just don't know. And I love a lot of the guys, and like, you know, you talk to people who just haven't seen these guys play enough to make a call on them. So I always stay away from that. You know why? Because I haven't seen enough of these guys really play, except for the big-time guys. Other than that, I just don't know.
Honesty and candor. We love that.
That's the same with me, man. The whole with Mel Kiper and Tom McShay, what they do, I would never be able to do that. I can't watch all of those guys play from the small schools and the mid-majors, and it's just too much going on. So I'm
right.
Like,
I agree.
Somebody
in our chat room said that Tom McShay came out and said that Andrew Luck is so good that whoever gets the number one pick next year should just automatically trade their quarterback regardless of who it is. Now, how do you say
wow.
But, you know. Anyway, Rob, change gears a little bit. It's a quick question. Good or bad thus far, what is your biggest surprise in the baseball season that has just started?
Well, I guess I would say how bad the Red Sox are. They lost 11-0 today. Bad. Yeah, 11-0 to the Angels, and you know, people can say whatever they want. They made the big moves. Carl Crawford's still batting under 200, and they got Adrian Gonzalez. Everybody and their uncle said the Red Sox, oh, they got the pitching. Oh, look at their lineup, this, that, the other thing. And they're in last place in the American League East and doing a good job at being at last place. Cleveland Indians, of course, are playing well, and that's a shocker because I didn't think that they had the arms that they have, but they got some good young pitchers, and they're doing real well. Those are my two biggest shockers so far in baseball, that the Red Sox are in last place and that Cleveland's in first place in the Central.
Yeah,
okay.
I definitely – I drank the Red Sox aid myself.
Yes, you did.
this is Dev again. We're going to get you out of here on this one. Talk a little bit about the Twitterverse. What are your thoughts on the whole Rashard Mendenhall, Bin Laden tweets, and his subsequent apology/clarifications? Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, my only thing is, the thing I don't like about people is, you know, when it's convenient for them, they want to forget about what this country's built on, which is freedom of speech and freedom of expression, and you have those rights. Okay, now once you say asinine stuff, you have to take the brunt of it or whatever. I mean, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have the right to say it or whatever. I mean, we in this country have allowed and let the Ku Klux Klan take out permits and march downtown. They have their right to do it. Skinheads have the right to have a parade and say their you know, propaganda, whatever they want to say, but people have a right to come out and yell against them. And the same thing with Mendenhall. I mean, he has a right to say whatever he wants to say, but he can't be squeamish after the fact when people attack him because they don't like it. So he has a right to say it, and I don't have an issue with him saying it, but he has to be man up and you know what, and take the hit for saying it when you put that stuff out there like that.
Yeah.
We're going to speak about that whole situation towards the end of the show. I mean, it wasn't supposed to be, but it kind of turned into our main topic this week. But, Rob, once again, man, we thank you for coming on, and we see you on your next visit. So you can
come on
and spread the gospel. Oh, when are you going to be on the show?
On today, and I'll be on tomorrow. Me and Skip will be on tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. on ESPN2.
All right.
Eat his lunch.
Everybody check him out.
Take his lunch.
Everybody check that out.
Bend him up.
All right.
All right. We'll talk to you next time.
All right. Take it easy, guys. Yep. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Rob.
Yep.
Peace out, Rob.
Rob Parker, ESPN, everybody.
That's what's up. So we can go straight into these hot topics, since, you know, what we just ended on with Rob. We're going to get back into that later on in the show. Did you guys hear about the Francisco Liriano, the Twins pitcher who threw the first no-hitter of the MLB season the other night?
Yeah.
Yeah,
all right,
sir.
This is the controversy here. He threw a no-hitter, but he had 6 walks and only 2 strikeouts. So does that diminish the no-hitter for any of you guys?
I personally don't think it does. I mean, that's a reason why they have things like no-hitter, perfect game. You know, there's a lot of different type of outings you can have as a pitcher. So he had a no-hitter. He put pressure on his defense. But that, a no-hitter is a team accomplishment in a sense. It's not just the pitcher. The team came through for him. Although they did get they jerked the other team because in the 8th inning that wasn't an out when the dude was running to first base. But that's neither here nor there. The fact of the matter is, because he didn't strike all those people out and he walked a lot of batters, it's still a no-hitter.
Yeah. I don't see – I kind of argue a little the other way, but I wasn't arguing against it being a no-hitter. Like you said, a no-hitter is a no-hitter. Nobody got a hit and got on base from it. It is what it is. I'm just saying that I do look at it a little, you know, a little side-eye because – like I said, only 2 strikes. You don't have to just be dealing and strike everybody out, but the dude only had 2. So can we say he threw a no-hitter? Or can we say they defended a no-hitter?
Well, I mean, he threw a no-hitter, but at the same time, that doesn't mean – because I've seen pitchers give up hits but have a more dominant performance than pitchers that don't give up a hit and throw a no-hitter.
Yeah.
You know, people be quote
no-hitter
thing, but I've seen pitchers strike out 20, you know what I'm saying, and didn't have a no-hitter. So, you know, it is a no-hitter, but at the same time – it may not have been the most dominant pitching performance, but it is a no-hitter.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a no-hitter. It's definitely a no-hitter. It just wasn't a dominating no-hitter. So I guess if we're ranking categories of no-hitters, it just wasn't that dominating. But he got it. They won the game. Kill, you got any thoughts on that?
Yo, it's like now we're getting into the semantics of the whole idea of a no-hitter. And to me, I mean, it's a no-hitter. I mean, okay, it wasn't a, you know, 15 strikeout. You know, no-hitter, but it was still no-hitter, so I really don't have too much else to say on it.
I don't mind analyzing it because I kind of look at it like, and I did this the other day, I was just sitting here thinking to self, and I said, self, you know, what's the difference between Peja Stojakovic getting 40 that time when he had, he was like 11 for 13 with some free throws, and say Chris Paul getting 40. And I think the difference there is the pressure that you put on the other team as far as defending. So in looking and sort of juxtaposing that example over the no-hitter, it's like I'd rather see the dominant display, even if it's not a no-hitter, is more important to me because it put more pressure on the opposing team than, you know, a non-dominant no-hitter, if I'm making sense.
No, I get you. I totally get what you're saying.
Because if I go to the rack, if I go to the rack and score 40, not only am I getting my man in foul trouble, but I'm getting the big man in foul trouble, and I'm creating for my teammates. If I stand on the outside and shoot J's, I mean, it's impressive, but there's no pressure on the D. It's either you rebound or you don't.
Right. Dag, we had a question on our Facebook page for Rob, but I saw the question a little too late. Somebody wanted me to ask him about what he thought about the Dan Snyder lawsuit against Dave McKenna in the Washington City paper. Jermaine, we try to talk to him off air and get that answer for you, get his thoughts. All right, y'all know it's a big fight this weekend. Shane Mosley, Sugar Shane Mosley, against Manny the Pac-Man Pacquiao. So
the drug addict.
All right, let's try to talk about this fight without getting into what the fight should be and who should be fighting. So let's go real quick to the tail of the tape, and then I get you brothers' opinions on how you think it's going to go down, what you think is going to happen.
You talking to me, y'all?
I'm talking to you and Jimmy. He already threw his drug addict.
I was ready to go. I was ready
to
go.
You about to go coward. Jimmy about to go drug addict, and then y'all going to spend 10 minutes talking about two people that are not even fighting. So the tail of the tape, of course, the whole... The height thing, Pacquiao 5'6.5", Shane Mosley 5'9", Pacquiao with a 67-inch reach, Mosley with a 74-inch reach. I really don't care how big their necks are or their chest or their biceps or their
all of that.
So we're just gonna go with the height, the reach, and the age. Pacquiao.
Hey, Dev, catch your question though. Your question.
Yeah.
Is it another drug test coming before the fight?
I have no idea.
Shane may live an alternative lifestyle, but he's not a coward.
All right,
okay.
But listen, with Shane having like a 7-inch reach advantage, of course he's a little heavier and he's taller. Y'all give him good chances in this one?
Man, I mean, I'll go first. All I want to say is, when Shane fought Floyd, Shane was tired after, like, round two. So I don't know how his cardio game is going to be. You know, because Pac-Man, you know, I don't know whether it's the drugs or not, but he has energy the entire fight. So I don't know if he can outlast him. Unless Shane, like, bodies him early, because we have seen Pac-Man lose before, so it wouldn't be a surprise. Unless Shane bodies him early, the longer the fight goes, the worse it is for Shane, because his cardio game is weak.
Yeah, well, you know, he's He's like 4 months shy of 40 right now, and Pac-Man's like 30. Pac-Man's like 32. But no, I mean, conventional wisdom would tell you with the size difference between these guys, Shane has a real good chance. But like you said, you know, if he's going to do it, he probably has to do it early, because if he looks like anything, if he looks like he looked after round two of the Mayweather fight, then he's going to be in trouble.
Yo, he straight
fight.
Admitted it. He said, after round two, I ain't have nothing. Dog,
yeah,
I saw a fight for 12 rounds and admit that after round two, I ain't really had no energy. Like, come on, cuz.
But you know what's worse, Jimmy? This is going to be a more physical fight. They're going to be brawling a little more because Pac-Man is not a defensive fighter like Mayweather.
That may help Shane, though. He couldn't touch Floyd because Floyd was defense first and Pac-Man is offense first. So that may actually either he gonna get his wig knocked off or he may knock his ball out. Like, it ain't like we never seen Pac-Man lose before. He has losses.
So in your prediction, this one not going the distance. Either way,
oh,
it's not going.
Oh, no, no days, no hats.
Austin, what you think about Shane's chances?
I mean, we've definitely seen Pac-Man lose, but we've seen Shane over the years lose twice as much. And I would go on record as saying Shane is closing in on being a loser. I mean, he's not Roy Jones. He's not Roy Jones. And I would like him to finally, at 40, just come out of the closet. Y'all know what I mean.
But you're saying that, but Shane won the last big fight that people thought he was going to lose.
Exactly.
Which fight was that?
With the boy that looked like Scar from The Lion King.
he wasn't good, and Shane's conditioning concerns me. Shane's age concerns me. Shane is one of those dudes, kind of like when you're a middle-aged man and you're early in your middle age, you can revert back to your 20s for short periods of time, but you can't maintain that, man. He's not. He doesn't stand a chance.
Yeah, Dev, you talking about he fought Antonio Margarito.
Margarito,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, he beat Margarito, but I mean Shane is like he got 46 wins. I mean he's not a slouch. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I mean Roy got a lot of wins too.
The difference is Roy was fighting trash truck drivers, you know what I'm saying, paper boys and stuff like
UPS
that.
UPS workers.
He had no
UPS
comp.
Workers.
There was no comp though for his weight class. He was so good, like it was crazy.
Lose some weight. But listen, before I go to Kill, because I was going to qualify that anyway, because people may think, well, Dad, y'all just slighting Shane because you're asking about his chances in the fight. The only reason I'm asking that, because we all know Pac-Man is the more, you know, he's the highly acclaimed fighter right here, and here's the difference in the purse. Pac-Man is getting a sure $25 million for this fight, while Mosley is getting Mosley's getting $5 million plus commission. So he's getting $5 million and a little bit off the door, but Pac-Man is getting $25 million. So automatically, we think the guy that's getting $25 million is supposed to have. He's supposed to be the favorite.
No,
that's
only
why
right. My man is the prime minister of the Philippines. Come on,
yeah, I mean, I think
he has a chance. Like I said, because I mean, even if you look at Shane's losses, Shane has never been knocked out. I mean. Pac-Man has been knocked out twice. I'm talking about cold knocked out. Like,
I mean,
so with that reach advantage and the size, pause, if he gets to him in the beginning of the fight, he has a chance now. But at the end of the day, like I said, the longer the fight goes, the worse chance it is for old head.
Yeah. I mean, we throw our barbs and joke at Shane Mosley, but historically, Shane Mosley's a great fighter. He might be a little too much past his prime, trying to rumble at almost 40 against who they consider to be the best fighter in the world.
Right. And he might be a little overrated.
Kill,
I mean, a little
Kill,
overrated.
Kill, what's
Yo,
your thought?
I think, I like to see Sugar Shane win because Pacquiao's been building up so much steam. But I got a feeling Pacquiao's going to win. That's it. All
right, so that's our first prediction. So we got a win for Pacquiao. So, Jimmy, who you actually think is going to win?
I think the fight gets canceled when he takes the next drug test, and you know. But no, all jokes aside, though, if the fight does happen, I think the drug addict may outlast him. See, it's hard for me because I want Shane to knock his block off, but at the same time, as long as the fight goes, that's it for him. My man got no cardio, so I'm gonna pick Pacquiao. He's gonna get in the middle, maybe like seventh, eighth round. Because I think it may be the first time that Shane actually gets knocked out. Shane's never been knocked out.
Yeah, because it's becoming obvious throughout all of our boxing talk on the show that you want somebody to knock Pac-Man's block off. So,
I just want to see the HGH like drip out of his mouth as he gets knocked out.
Austin, who you got?
Yo, Blueprint, when did you become a Pacquiao detractor? Like, as time goes on and we get further and further into this, you become more of a Pacquiao like detracting. I just don't know where
let me explain to you why. Because I think that boxing is racist, and they want to make somebody they don't like for African American boxers to be labeled pound for pound, so they always look for the other guy. That's just my opinion.
Look at how Pretty Girl Swirl acts.
it doesn't matter because it, the bottom line is before Pretty Girl Swirl act like that, his purses was like $200,000. He started acting like that and got $30 million purses. So I don't knock his hustle.
That's because he fought Oscar. Anytime you touch Oscar, you gain wisdom and money.
Once he switched from Pretty Boy Floyd to Money Mayweather and made this persona, it's sort of like wrestling. Look at his income. So I don't knock him for doing that. Like, do I think it's coonery? Yeah, but I also see his purses going up ever since he made
so
this persona.
You're condoning selling out for the dough.
I'm not condoning it, but I see why he did it. Would I personally do it? No. But at the end of the day, I like how they like just made this guy pound for pound when this guy's been knocked out.
We got a caller. Let's take this call. You 646-924. You in the war room? State your biz.
What's up, guys? This is Ezra. If you don't know me, I'm the host of Idiot Sports Talk.
What's up, Ezra? What's good, baby?
What's up, homie?
What's going on?
I want to make a couple points on this matchup. First, let me say, I don't give a flying. I don't know if I'm allowed to curse on the show, but I don't care
We know how you get down. Dying. This is a family show.
It's dying in boxing right now. I guess you guys will agree with that. Boxing's on the low. And you said a point. is kind of racist. If you, I disagree with you there, because think about it like this. The Klitschko brothers, they've been having the heavyweight titles for how many years now, and no one gives them love. And you know what? They don't deserve any love because they suck. Okay?
Yeah, they do. They suck. They suck.
But they're white. They're white, but they don't get no love. Am I right or wrong?
No, you're absolutely right about that. You're absolutely right about
that. And if you go in the history of boxing, African Americans have been running the sport for the last, I don't know, 60, 70 years. I don't even know. That's about,
yeah.
Am I right or wrong?
Yeah.
You're absolutely right
about that.
Everybody loves Ali. So I don't know about all that. About they just make
it. But if you look,
Manny Pacquiao.
But here. Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
So what I was saying is, if you look at Ali and Tyson, even in their prime, they get love now. But in their prime, they receive the same amount of hate that Floyd does. I mean, in terms of the mass media. Now, we all love Tyson, you know, and Ali, but at the time when they were dominating the sport, they say type things. If you look at any kind of historical like footage of boxing, Ali, they always try to make somebody else to be pound for pound better than him, but nobody could beat him.
Well, Jimmy, with Ali. Ali is kind of understandable just because of the time period that we were in and how everything was.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of, that's kind of forgiving.
Yeah, it has something to do with everything. One, a lot of people don't like trash talkers, one. And two, obviously, with Ali, with the draft, and you know how a lot of Americans feel about that stuff.
But,
and Mike Tyson being a rapist. There's some stuff to that, all right, guys. You know what I'm saying? And Manny Pacquiao, I guess he has an argument. Even if you don't believe he's the top five, I mean, pound for pound, you got to believe he's the top three most exciting fighters in boxing.
I agree. I'll give you that.
We all do.
But let me ask you a question. Ezra, let me ask you a question. Do you see the difference in the amount of money that Floyd make once he started acting like an asshole? Because the thing about it is, when he was Pretty Boy Floyd and just fought his fight, he wasn't making nowhere near the same kind of money.
You know why he wasn't making any money? Because he didn't fight no big fighters. After he beat that,
exactly.
He beat his
Oscar to get that bread.
After he fought his first big fighter, that's when he started getting paid, and they were like, oh, we got to look out for this. Anyone can talk smack. How many boxers that we don't know talk smack about their opponents and act like Floyd Mayweather? Floyd Mayweather wasn't the first person with that persona, Money Mayweather.
Absolutely. No, he wasn't, but he sold it. I mean, he created a persona. I mean, I remember him going in wrestling with the whole pretty boy thing. He created this whole image, you know, and he made money
anyway.
With it, even outside of it.
Floyd Mayweather, he broke. Come on, man. He owed IRS $2 million. Come on, man. I want to hear that crap. But the fight on Saturday, I guess my prediction is obviously I'm going to go with Manny Pacquiao. Shane Mosley, he got his – Manny Pacquiao, he's fought big fighters, obviously, Margarito, and Joshua Clady. Even Joshua Clady is a very good fighter, and he's in his prime, and he did absolutely nothing to Manny Pacquiao, and he said it's because of his speed.
Ezra, we got to bounce. We're about to talk some basketball. But tell everybody where they can hear your show.
Everybody can listen to my show on – you can catch it on iTunes. It's called Idiot Sports Talk, and it's explicit. I curse a lot. Just warning everyone out there, if you don't want to hear me cursing, don't listen to my show. It's simple as that.
All right, and if y'all
Ezra,
want
to – we got to get you on for some more boxing, man. We see you love boxing. We got to get you on next time there's some boxing, man.
As a matter of fact, I'm an MMA guy more than anything. But boxing is – how can I say –
I'm an MMA guy, too.
If boxing can never really die because it's so much history and passion, it can always come back to its old glory days. But right now, they're just besides Manny and Mayweather, there's nobody else. You need a true heavyweight too to dominate the sport too. So it's tough.
Yeah, I agree. All right, thanks for the call. All
right, man. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, man.
All right,
homie.
Have
a
good one, guys.
All right. If y'all want some laughs, y'all can also join Idiot Sports Talk Facebook page. Like he said, he is explicit. But
that's an understatement, but shout out to him. But, Dev, you want to talk some more boxing, you want to go talk some hoops?
Go ahead and talk that. Well, my prediction, I got Manny in the fight. You got Manny. Brad, just who you got real quick before we move on?
Manny going to beat that woman up.
All right, so, we're going to go ahead and see. Y'all know how to get in touch with us, so we ain't got to do a second media blast here. No doubt.
Yo, let's talk some hoops real quick, though, good brothers.
All right.
Let me start it off by talking about the Heat and the Celtics, yo. Because
I don't know if all you guys went on in like major predictions, but I know that Dev, did you pick the Celtics and Heat on our Facebook page?
I picked the Celtics in six, so they're gonna have to pull a sweep if I'm gonna be.
who did you have coming in, Austin?
Celtics, of course.
Okay, and Kill, who'd you have?
I had the Celtics in six.
I picked the Heat, but I didn't pick the Heat. I didn't think it would be like this. I picked the Heat to win in seven, and I gave them that because they had home court, and I think that they're actually playing their best ball at the right time. But the Celtics look like old, flabby, and sick. What's going on? And will Shaq help? I mean, yo, they're like hobbling around. Paul Pierce is hurt. Shaq's coming back, and he played like 3 minutes.
It's kind of like what Rob was saying earlier. He's kind of thinking along the lines of me. I mean, I'm not a Celtics fan by any stretch. Come on, I'm a Sixers fan, so, you know, I hate the Celtics just as much as anybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, the two games that they lost were on the road. So right now Miami really hasn't done anything but hold serve. So I wouldn't say that the Celtics were in as much trouble as the Lakers since they lost their two games on the road. But,
yeah.
You know, Shaq is coming back for game three. I really don't know how much that can help because not playing for 2 months, even if he was a little bit effective, how many minutes could Shaq play after not playing basketball professionally for 2 months?
See,
so we will have
to see. This is why they should have kept Kendrick Perkins.
Yo, I don't like to use cliches and old adages, but you know what they say, you know, the series doesn't start until somebody wins.
Yeah, I totally get that.
So
how about their body language? Rob brought up a great point that I didn't think about. He said that neither one of the teams, Lakers nor Celtics, have played good basketball. So if they play good basketball and still lose, it looks a lot different. So I totally agree with that. I didn't think about that until he said it.
Right.
But
right now,
Austin, what's your opinion of the series? That's a good opinion there, good brother.
My fault, brothers. I was in deep thought. I think that the Celtics do look old, and my wonder, and I'm really thinking at their ages, did they fall off a cliff? Like, is it that they just fell off a cliff and they're not coming back, or can they muster something? Because the funny thing is Ray Allen, as much as we clown him and joke about him being sweet and cupcake-ish, yo, he's in tremendous shape, and he's cool, and he's going to do what he does in terms of the physicality and the athleticism of the game because he's a shooter. But Paul Pierce goes to that rack. And so you have to wonder, is he going to be able to come back to form against that tremendous athleticism that he's facing? Shaq,
yo, he's not going to – he got an Achilles injury, too, though. They say he got an Achilles injury, too. He's going to play through it, so we'll see what happens. But, Dr. Bay, what you think, brother?
Yo, Shaq coming back. I think it's a disgrace that Shaq can sit out the whole season, right? Like, more than half of the season, they're not even be ready for the playoffs when they need him most. So, it looks like the Heat are going to take it, but I'd like to see the Celtics come back and win.
Yo, Shaq is the reason why they're going to have problems. Like, think about this, you guys. Shaq set out, didn't really play this season. Yo, Shaq has a guaranteed contract for next season.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, he got guaranteed money for next season. Like, come on, man.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I got some labor issues with cats like Shaq. Yo, Shaq could basically say, look, I'm injured. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what are they going to do? They got to pay him.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Let's talk about the other series.
Shaq hasn't been doing this for years. This is what Shaq does.
Oh, yeah. Yo,
this
I ain't knocking
this
up, man. Look, yo, Shaq is one of the top three players in terms of money generated from the NBA contract. So shout out to Shaq for getting that money. But let's talk about the Bulls and Hawks. Kills Bulls, and one of your favorite players, Jamal Crawford, plays for the Hawks, brother Austin. So what do you guys think about this series?
If the Hawks play to their potential, they have too many weapons to lose to the Bulls, in my opinion. But the Bulls, as Akil astutely pointed out, are very much about team play and playing the right way. Everybody do their job. Ain't no egos. I just wonder if they're going to lean in too heavily on Derrick Rose, whereas the Hawks have 1, 2, 3, 4 legitimate scorers, and they can play D when they need to. So, yeah. You know, I think the matchup favors, and somebody need to give Jamal Crawford some real money in the starting job. Joe Johnson is a fraud. I'm done.
I knew you were going to say that. But Joe Johnson is nowhere near as bad as you give him grief for. Joe Johnson is a good player. I did hear Jimmy say a while ago that he'd take Iggy over. I wouldn't take Iggy over Joe Johnson.
I do think Joe Johnson is a good – Joe Johnson is a good player. Joe
is
Johnson
he
is a
$120 million good player?
Absolutely never.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, we can't knock Joe Johnson for taking it, though. But
not at all.
I'm not knocking
not
him for taking it, but then I'm comparing his –
I would even still say that Joe Johnson's a superstar. He's probably the quietest superstar in the league. You know what I'm saying? He's very unassuming, but when his J go in, the net don't even move.
What about when my man Smooth Sweet Craw does his thing, Paul?
Sweet Craw? Craw is nice. We always knew Craw was nice, but he's not. I'm not going to say he's better than Joe Johnson and deserves to start in the two spot. I think his role of coming off the bench suits him great for that team because
when he comes off the bench, it's his unit.
He's the one.
Austin is biased. Austin loves
Jamal
Crawford.
All jokes and decide being objective and basketball-wise, Jamal Crawford is 6'5 and maybe 190 pounds soaking wet. And Joe Johnson is a legit 6'7 and 230. Defensively, Jamal Crawford's a liability, where Joe Johnson is not. So I understand why you start Joe Johnson over Jamal Crawford.
Yo, my man Jamal Crawford been on like 36 teams already. He puts up 60. He better put up about 60 on like three or four different teams.
Yeah, he got more 50-point games. He, like the only player with like 50-point games on multiple teams, like three teams or something, two or three.
And
yeah,
he's got
like,
the
yo,
most
man,
and one.
Man.
And he's got the most. And he's got the most and one 3-pointers with 36.
But what B. Austin just said is the reason that he hasn't been with one team. The reason that he's not considered a superstar is because he's 180 pounds soaking wet, and you know, and he plays no D. If he played D, and he was 20 pounds heavier, he'd be a superstar too, guarding his league.
He is a problem on offense. He is a problem.
Yeah, if grandma had gonads, she'd be grandpa. Yo, anyway, Dr. Bay, what's your thoughts on the series though, good brother?
Yo, game one I was pretty I was like, man, you know, it's looking bad. You know, we might not make it out the second round. But after watching game two, I realized that we're starting to give Joe Johnson so much attention that we're kind of funneling him to make other people make plays. So, and Josh Smith seems to be ineffective. So as long as we can make, you know, Joe Johnson move the basketball, keep the ball out of his hands because he lit us up for 34 game one, I think we got it because then it becomes a grinded out, ugly game, which I don't know the Hawks want to play.
I got a question for all three of you guys real quick.
Right,
yo, what the hell happened to Carlos Boozer, yo? A.K.A. Joe Buttons. Don't he look just like Joe Buttons? But, yo, what happened to the ball, man?
I have no idea.
He forgot how to play. I don't know.
Yeah, like, what happened? Yo.
At least he had 11 rebounds last night. He did something positive for the team. But I hear
He should give D. Williams part of his check because it's starting to look like he got him paid.
Yo, speaking of Paul Crawford, and I ran in the chat room, said, wasn't Jamal 2 for 10 last night? He said, dude's a career 41% field goal percentage shooter. He's a clip. He said, we hype.
Yo, cats that can't score 50 always say stuff like that because they can't score 50.
Hey, Naran, speaking of Naran in the chat room, you talk all that trash, but you like the biggest AI fan in the world. That's all I'm going to say.
Yo, watch your mouth.
That's all I'm going to say. Yo, we got a call, yo. Oh, let me take this call real quick. 267-912, you're in the war room. What's your name? Where you calling from?
It's Corey. Corey Kent, 254.
Corey, what's up, homie?
Kent, what up, Corey?
What up, Kent?
Yo, man, I'm listening to y'all talk, man. Yo, I'm going to have to agree with Naran, man. Yo, Jamal Crawford is he's garbage on defense, and he shoots like 20%. Like, what are y'all talking about? He being a superstar? Like, he's nobody.
No, no, no. Cam, we said if he was 20 pounds heavier and played some defense, he would be a superstar two-guard in the league. Like you said, he don't play any defense. If he was 20 pounds heavier, he could go to the rack and not get beat up, and his shooting percentage probably be a little higher. So
now,
we know what
Cam,
you're saying.
I'm not trying to offend you, brother.
Huh?
I ain't trying to offend you, brother, because it probably doesn't apply to you. I know you're a knowledgeable basketball fan. But when people don't like somebody, they bring up defense. When people like someone, defense go out the window. And we just talk. So, yeah, the boy don't play defense, but he's capable of hanging 40 on you at any time. So, let's not. And our favorite player, my favorite player, second favorite player of all time is AI. And I'll be the first to admit, AI was a clip. He held more guns on his body than anyone ever.
Yo, hey Cam, how you feel about AI, Cam?
My team can't score. But if on any, like 98% of the teams in the league, he belongs in the role he's in. Like, y'all making this dude out to be great. Like,
Hold on.
Joe Johnson shot 44% this year and 29% on threes. Jamal Crawford shot 42% and 36% on threes, if y'all want to go by percentages.
Joe Johnson's not a superstar either. Joe Johnson's a secondary player getting superstar money.
Cam, let me ask you a question, Cam. How you feel about AI?
I think AI was the greatest scoring point guard, two guard, in a point guard's body in league history.
That's okay. Bias right there. All right, but Cam, we got our next guest on the line, so we're gonna let you go. But thanks for your call, brother.
No problem.
All right, Corey.
Austin, let me make a comment on you, Austin. I realize you like gunners. All your favorite players are cats that put the rock up, yo.
Hey, B.
Yo,
Austin,
scoring is the name of the game. That's how you win.
He always say that that's how you got to put the ball in the bucket to score. All right, so our next guest, in my opinion, is a very slept-on MC from our city, the City of Brotherly Love. If you didn't have a copy of his debut CD, Many Faces, back in 97, then you missed out, homie. He's a graduate of the great Howard University, and he's ascended to even higher levels outside of hip-hop. But we're going to let him tell you about that when he gets on. So right now, we're going to bring him on the line after this quick clip.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I gotta talk to these people, man. Talk to them, man. Some folks said I was finished, didn't think I had survived, homie. But not a blemish, not a scratch, ain't a spot on me. Cause I ain't been seen in a minute, that's a knock on me. Yet I'm still the best in the business, got some guap on it. Put your money down, ha. Y'all a bunch of clowns. Ha. May fool your fans, but I see through you like an ultrasound. It's me, Trey, so cut the stunting now, you're fronting now. It's funny how I'm still good in your hood that you don't come around. Well, if you...
Yeah, Tracy Lee, everybody. Welcome to the show, Trey Lee. What up, man?
What's happening? What's the business? What's good, man? It's been glad y'all called me on here, man. I hear y'all, chopping it up about, great scores and who, who's doing work in the league. That's what I do. That's what me and my homies do. That's all we do is sit around and compare and contrast. So it's good that, that y'all got a show going on like this, you know what I mean?
What's up, family?
Hey, man, that's what's up. We're going to get back into that. We're going to get back into some sports because we know you're a big sports fan. But real quick, and this is Dev, real quick, I just wanted to ask you because, everybody on our show, it's usually five of us here. It's only four of us tonight. One of our homies, PJ, he had to attend to some other business. But we've all been hip-hop heads since back in the day. So we want to know what's your thoughts
81.
On the current state of hip-hop. And we can... two-parted, and how do you think hip-hop has affected sports, like, in the last decade?
All right, now, before I answer that question, can I be as candid as possible? Is this, like, PG? Is this all,
you can,
like...
No.
You can be
keep it
as
100.
Candid as possible. Just keep it clean.
Okay, I got you. To sum it up, man, I'm going to be quite frank and honest, man, and this is no disrespect to the new school cast coming up, but overall, like, there are exceptions, but overall, it's trash, and I'll tell you why. It's a lot of, the era of hip hop I grew up in, it was no biting allowed. You know what I'm saying?
Some, I mean, plenty of people have said that in their lyrics, but it's just too many people and too many, you know, things sounding alike and saying the same stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's like, where's the originality? And I ain't just talking about, like, okay, of course we all use samples and all that. I ain't talking about originality in that. But how they use the sample was original. How they flip words was original. You know what I'm saying? How, the way they came out, how they dressed, you know what I'm saying? All of that. Everybody had their own distinct character. It seemed like that just disappeared. You know what I mean? You could cut on a video, cut down the sound, and it looked the same. You dig me? That is my perception of it. You know what I mean?
That's what we talk about that all the time. When I argue with people, you know, who try to say hip-hop is in its greatest shape right now, you know, with me and where I'm from, it's like the first and foremost of hip-hop. I mean, if you're going to call yourself a rapper, you have to be able to rap. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
You can't just live off of a beat. You can't live off the production because most of the time the artist isn't even making the beat. So how are you going to live off of that? But back in the day, the most heinous thing that you could do, the biggest crime in hip-hop was biting. But now it seems like it's cool.
It's socially acceptable. Like, you could take a cat's line, you could take his beat, I mean, his whole beat, you know what I'm saying? You could do whatever it's like, and it's cool, and it's like it's hip and all that. I personally can't get with it. Now, to answer the second part of your question, how has it affected hip-hop? I think it definitely affects hip-hop. I mean, a lot of these cats out there are young boys. Your superstars is in their mid-20s. You know what I'm saying? So they definitely affected by the music, in all ways, shape, form, and fashion. From the way from the way people carry their style on and off the court and all of that. But I think it was a bigger influence in hip hop in the days where, and it's not too far back. I'd say maybe 10 years ago when AI was at the top of the game. AI personified, you know, the culture. You know what I'm saying? The way it was right then and there. You know what I'm saying? Like, now, I don't know who personifies who. Ain't nobody out there looking like Wayne, so it ain't really that much of an influence. Ain't nobody out there looking like Drake, so it ain't that much of an influence. But you can tell where AI got his roots from. You can tell where a lot of these, you know, cats that was out there in, like, between 98 and, like, 2002, 2003, I think hip-hop had his biggest influence on the game. You know what I mean?
Trey, this is the boy, B. Austin. Glad to have you on the show. I just wanted to make
appreciate a comment
about the answer to the first question asked. You know, one of the things that we always share amongst ourselves and even with other people that we speak to is, you know, hip-hop and art at large, for that matter, across genres, is about when your mind and your heart meet and the expression that you got to get out. It's not even about what the audience is going to feel, but it's about, yo, I got to get this out and let the people hear it and let it touch. Now that's gone, and it's either my mind tells me I got to make a hustle move to get cake, so it's a hustle, and it's no longer about art, or it's, yo, I see whatever this dude is doing over here is working, whatever this dude is doing over here is working. I may have something in me that I want to get out, but I'm a little scared because I don't know how it's going to be accepted, so let me fall in line and do what everybody else is doing. And this nut music we have now suffers for it.
True indeed, and I want to piggyback off of what you just said, man, when you made the distinction between art and the money. You know what I'm saying? I tell people all the time, man, art and business naturally do not mix. And the reason why I say that is because when you're talking about business, you're talking about timelines, you're talking about fiscal years, you're talking about having product out there at a certain time so you get your money back. That's what the business is about now. It wasn't like, even though, you know, it was still a business thing, it was more driven by the art form. And I think you just touched on that. So when you got a money-driven business, your art is going to suffer all the time.
True.
Yeah. Hey, Trey, what's going on, fam? This is Jimmy. I got a question for you real quick. I know that I was peeping your site and everything. I see you on Facebook, Twitter, and the like. I see you heavy into the social media. But how do you think technology has affected the music business, where cats are just straight downloading, not buying albums? And what's your opinion on that?
Well, honestly, I think it's a good thing. If you go back to the inception of the game, and I'm speaking primarily of hip-hop, there was a lot of, and this was before social media came about, there was a lot of smaller labels. You had Jive, you had Next Plateau, you had Def Jam was even on a small basis, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there were a lot of smaller labels, and that's what I like in the social media thing too, as far as being able to get your music out in a various amount of ways. Now, as far as people downloading the music, I think if you got good quality music, people are gonna download it and they'll go buy it. The reason why people download music is because, like, it became a time where people made albums and they would only put like one or two hot joints on the album. So why would I just spend my $10? You know what I'm saying? To buy your album when you only got one or two joints. I'm downloading it. And plus, now I need to test it out because I don't trust you now. You know what I'm saying?
I agree with you.
You know what I'm saying? But if it's hot, I think they'll download and they'll buy it just because they want to support, because it's crazy. The other thing that the internet does is that it allows you to create your promotion team, your marketing team, because now these cats are downloading, they're spreading the word. They're telling you, yo, this thing is hot. I'm telling you, I got it. I don't mind that. I'll sacrifice, you know, like 10 cats download my joint if I get 500,000 sales out of it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, of course, those numbers are skewed a little bit, but you get what I'm saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I totally get you. And I agree with you because I do that a lot. Like, I'll check on somebody's jump, but if you put out the last album I actually bought probably was Ghost album. When I heard it, I was like, I'm going to go buy this. I'm going to go buy this because, to me, it was quality product. Another question I have for you real quick is, we all view ourselves as like well-rounded brothers, but a lot of artists don't have much to fall back on, but you, on the other hand, have credentials that will surprise a lot of people in our audience who don't know. Tell them about what you do outside of hip-hop.
Well, I tell you, hip-hop is a blessing to me because it prompted me to do a couple of things. It prompted me to tap into my creative juices and all that and become, you know, the writer and performer and all that stuff that I became. But what it also did is that it took me down a journey where I had to learn more, and because of the evolution of hip-hop and how it became from art to business, I had to learn how to take care of my business. So what happened was, when I signed my deal in 97 at Universal, I just wanted to get my music out. That was my primary goal. I wasn't concerned with how my business was handled and all of that stuff, and that's my fault. You know what I'm saying? I'm not blaming nobody for it. I didn't do the proper research and get an entertainment attorney, to handle my business. I went and got just an attorney. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, he didn't know the language. He didn't know, you know, the industry standard when it came to signing a contract. So, you know, me just wanting to get my music out, I took his word for it, and then I just signed my deal. Now, not to say it was a totally pro label, but there's certain things, hindsight 2020, that I just definitely wouldn't have went for if I'd have known better. So going through the trials and tribulations of being a signed artist, I recognized certain things as I was going along in the process. So, you know, long story short, what that prompted me to do was, look, I need to learn this for myself. You know what I mean? My lawyer ain't really hip to this game. He's a lawyer, but he was going, I don't know, family law or something. But he don't know the entertainment legal jargon and stuff like that. He don't know the industry standards. He don't know points and all of that stuff. So I just took my situation and said, you know what, let me get out of this and go learn it for myself from that side. So what I did was take the little earnings that I made. It should have been more, but I ain't complaining. Took that, and I parlayed that, and I went to law school. You know what I mean? And not only, and just so it ain't, you know, coming off like on some selfish whatever, it wasn't really for me because I didn't know, you know, what kind of window I had in the game as an artist. It was really for cats coming up behind me. You know what I'm saying? So that day, came up in the game, they would have at least me to say, yo, let's call up Trey. He knows, you know, such and such, not only from the forefront as an artist, but now he got his legal degree. You know what I'm saying? And now he's a licensed attorney. And he's going to tell me what's what and what's not. And that's the only thing I say to artists, man, be informed. You can make whatever decisions you want, but you got to make sure that all the cards are on the table before you make that decision. You know what I mean?
Because the uninformed always get taken advantage of, man. Information is everything.
Absolutely.
And that sort of segues us to my next question. This is B again. Your upcoming album, Esquire. I assume that title stems from the fact that you are an attorney, but tell us what the album is about, what your inspiration was, and when does it come out?
Well, I tell y'all a story. Like, basically, my intentions is to have it come out in October, like October 22nd, which is like your traditional Tuesday, you know, album dropping day. It's my birthday, basically, but it's also how I was homecoming. So basically, my whole idea, you know what I'm saying? You know,
Shout out to HU.
It word up.
All my bison.
No doubt. So the whole idea is to, you know, throw this big party. We do a party every year on homecoming Saturday night, but, you know, have that, parlay that into the album release party. But I stopped in the middle of working on it because I know I'm doing something different, but it's like I just had a revelation. And basically this is coming from the music side of the game. It's like I'm listening to records and I'm seeing how people doing records. It's like the game is so saturated, I'm trying to go all the way left. And I ain't talking about, like, so you don't understand me. You're going to understand me. But the way the music sounds, like using different instrumentation, the way it moves, it won't be a traditional loop. You know what I'm saying? Just you hear the same loop going back. I mean, that's fine, but I'm trying to be way different because the market is just too many rappers, man. Everybody rhymes, son. Everybody rhymes. Y'all know that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you got to separate yourself totally. You know what I mean? So especially in our
hometown, man, everybody rapping. Everybody.
Philly, you can't walk down a block in Philly.
What'd you say?
I said you can't walk down a block in Philly without seeing somebody rap. And I remember coming up in Philly, like, yo, nobody rap when I came up. Like, it's to the point now where every block you walk down, you see somebody as a rapper.
And they all clone. And like you said, it's funny because in Philly, I at least do have a little bit of self pride. At least we still maintain some level of lyrical integrity. But I'll be darn if everybody isn't a killer, man. Everybody freestyles. Yo, y'all kill like 100 people per bar.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, I can't, how many K's can you lift? How many 40s can you spray? Yo, give me something else. I can't relate. I'm 31 years old now. To keep it moving, just wanted to ask, you know, we had to ask, how was it to collaborate with the late, great Christopher Wallace, Notorious Big? Keep Your Hands High on your debut album, Many Faces. The people want to know. We want to know.
Man, two words, a blessing, son. Like, this dude taught me so much in that session, like, at that particular time about the game and all that, and I had known up to that point. I mean, the dude was incredible. It is not an adjective, like an adjective that describes greatness that doesn't describe this dude. Like, his the way he approaches records, you know what I'm saying, the way he delivers. Like, he was the first dude that I knew, first of all, that wrote without writing, you know what I'm saying? Now everybody does it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's the fad now. Everybody, nobody writes.
Yeah. That's a fad, right? You know what I'm saying? So he was the originator of that as far as I'm concerned. You know, you may get some arguments from Jay and his camp, but he knew how to, like, say more with less, if you know what I mean. Like, he could take one word and say that one word, and it would take somebody else, the average cat, like 6 words to say what he just said. But that's what made Big so dope. His simplicity, his use of words, the way he bends syllables. I mean, he's one of a kind, bro. You won't hear nobody before or after that sounds like him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wow. I heard that.
All right, and I'm being biased either, man. That's really understanding. Because I'm a competitor by nature. I wanted to chew this dude alive. Don't get it twisted.
hey, that's funny. That's funny because our homie, our co-host that's not here, PJ, like, Big is his favorite rapper of all time, and you can't say anything. I mean, even if you're not saying anything bad about Big, if you're saying anything that he might sniff as being disrespectful, he going to get on you about it. And we actually went off the air last week because, you know, we intro'd you last week for this week's show. Mm-hmm. So we went off the air with Keep Your Hands High. And we were talking after the show telling PJ how, you know, he's like, yo, Trey held his own with Big on that joint. And and even though he agreed with us, he still had to put us in our place. Like, yo, don't say nothing about Big, man. Like,
yo, Big fans of Chris. I almost got in a rumble over that. I said, yo, the boy held his own with Big. This is before I even knew you knew you were coming on the show. I was like, yo, he held his own with Big. And Cats got angry with me.
Yeah, we couldn't go to New York for a minute, man. Couldn't go to Brooklyn at all. But Trey, one of the things, just to touch on that, one of the things that I've noticed about great lyricists, especially when they respect one another and there's love there, even with us as a show, it's like when we do our PTRs, it's like there's always that friendly competition that need iron sharpens iron, steel sharpens steel. I watch it with the kids in a Slaughterhouse now. You know, it's a family thing, but I can't come whack. You know what I'm saying? And it's not about the fans and okay, Big is some big superstar or whatever. It's you're a lyricist and he's a lyricist, so y'all got to go at it over this track. I really respect hearing that from you, and no deference. You respect the brother, love the brother, but at the same time, I'm trying to kill this dude.
That's right, man. That's right. Like, I'm not going to get on this track with this guy and be the third wheel, if you dig what I mean. Like, you're not just going to outshine me. Like, I got to bring something, you know what I mean? I got to make you work. I got to compete, you know what I mean? Going back to the old sports thing. That's how I take it when I'm, you know, playing ball or whatever. Like, I'm going to make, you may get me one time or two times, but I'm going to get you back. You know what I'm saying? It ain't going to be just lopsided, you know what I mean?
This is Dev again. Speaking of that, because, you know, we know you're a big sports fan. As a matter of fact, I've been getting caught up lately on your Facebook page, getting into these sports debates.
Uh-huh.
And they get kind of crazy sometimes. But, I mean, we know where you're from, but where do your allegiance lie? Like, who do you root for in the four major sports?
Don't get banged on.
I haven't gotten that.
You're going to press the button already. All right, cool. I'm going to put it out there. And my family in Philly know. They know him for years. This is what it is. And I hope y'all listening.
All right.
Football, Eagles all day. All right. Hockey, Flyers all day. All right. Now, here's where it gets a little shaky. Baseball.
Don't say it.
Really, I really just started really digging the Phillies like maybe the last, I say the last 8 years, but they ain't my favorite team. Favorite team is the Yankees.
I knew you were going to say the Yankees.
Oh!
Ah.
What the hell is wrong with this girl?
All right, what about basketball?
Basketball, you know, Sixers never, I always liked the Sixers. Really, I love the Sixers, but I got a favorite team. My favorite team is the Lakers.
All right, well, Jimmy's a Laker fan, so Jimmy.
Yo, I'm the same way. Like, I love the Sixers, grew up. I still go to the games to this day. But I became a Laker fan the first time as a kid I ever seen Magic play. And, I ain't going to lie. Like, I grew up as a Magic stan. You couldn't tell me Magic did anything wrong.
You still can't.
Hey, I agree with you. You'll never get an argument with me. You'll never get and I go even before Magic. I go to the Kareem days. You know what I'm saying?
To me, Kareem is the GOAT. And
Adrian Dantley and Jamal Wilkes before, you know, Magic got drafted in 70.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
To me, Kareem is
Trey,
the GOAT.
Jimmy,
but I got an argument over that.
People be ready to fist fight Jimmy because he say Kareem the GOAT. And, you know, people, Mike fans ain't trying to hear that.
No, it's an argument, though. It's hard. You know, think about it, dog. Six MVP.
Thank you.
You know what I'm saying? Six
thank
rings.
You. Thank
the all-time leading scorer of all time. You know what I'm saying?
Yo,
it's
thank
argument.
You, man. Yo, for you saying that, I'm buying three albums, fam.
See, the whole Jordan argument comes in with the you know, he had the marketing machine behind him.
I'm with you because that's the only point I make. I say the same thing. Jordan was a brand. Like, you know what I mean? His brand was built by the machine. And I'm not saying that Jordan wasn't that bull. Jordan was that bull, but people act like there's no argument at all. That's what I don't get.
I think Kareem is definitely the greatest the greatest center of all time, alhamdulillah. I definitely think that he's on the list. He definitely the greatest Muslim basketball player ever. Shout out to my brothers there at the mosque tomorrow, Friday night. But, yo, he's not better than Mike, man.
Yo, I'm going to leave this alone because we're going to go for hours on this. Before you get out of here, I got to ask you another question, though.
It's almost over. I'm just getting started.
I got another question, though. Because you are an attorney, what's your thoughts on the situation in the NFL? Like, it's in courts now. And we know that you're an attorney now. So what's your thoughts on this?
Oh, man, listen, I'm going to take my attorney hat off on this, John. It's absolutely crazy. I cannot get down with billionaires arguing with millionaires. I can't get with it. I just can't. Listen, I want to sit down and watch the product on the field, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm a hard-working dude that want to sit down on Sundays and watch y'all dudes do what y'all do. Get back in there and play ball, man. All of this, and plus, I think the players, the NFLPA is arguing the wrong points. They're not arguing the wrong points. They're not bringing the real deal to the table to get to the sympathies of the people. The deal is that whole retirement package and how them players suffer after they get off the field. That should be your main focal point if you want to get to the media and the sympathies of the people. Otherwise, what we're looking at, or at least the perspective that me and my homies got, is billionaires arguing with millionaires about who gets a piece of what. Man, I ain't making millions, so I don't care. That's my point.
I heard
what's
that.
Your thing? What's your thing?
Well, yeah,
we won football. You know what I'm saying?
Week,
we won football.
Of course we won football. And my sentiments are kind of like the same. Like, I don't like to see. I mean, it's kind of cliche to say it because I was told that when I said it, you know, the millionaires against the billionaires. But at the same time, like, I just don't see how a deal is that hard to strike when you have a $9 billion a year industry. I just don't see how a deal is that hard to strike. And I'm not blaming it on any one side.
Especially when nobody's making minimum wage. You know, people in the union, when, you know, auto workers or anything like that, you know what I'm saying? They're not making minimum wage, man. They're making good money.
Yeah, so it's becoming a problem because it's starting to look like it might cut into the season, and that's corny right there.
That's very corny.
All right, so we're going to switch gears on you. And get you out on this one. Give us your predictions on the rest of the NBA playoffs since they're already underway. We got two surprise series going on. Celtics down 2-0. That might not be a surprise because they dropped two on the road. The Lakers, though, dropped two at home. So who you got at this point repping the East and the West in the finals? Well, first, you know, how are these series going to finish playing out? You think the Lakers got a chance of coming back?
Well, I tell you what, and because it's my squad, like, I love them, and then I'm harsh on them. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I criticize them when they need to be criticized. And right now, to me, the execution is not there. They're getting out-executed. They're letting Dirk just find his spots on the floor. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to – like, you watch the games like I watch the game. This dude loves to hit that jumper falling away off the off-foot.
Fade away. Mm-hmm.
So, you know what I'm saying? Off the off-foot. So why don't you put him in a position where he's not that comfortable? I mean, just little stuff like that. You know what I mean? I think they're getting punked personally. You know what I mean? They're looking for the foul, you know what I'm saying, on the shot all the time. You know what I mean? Instead of just going up with the basket and being strong, going up to the basket and being strong with it. And then they got mad mental lapses during key parts of the game. I don't get it. So right now, they don't look good, man. And this game three, of course, you know, I mean, it's cliche, but it's the biggest game of the series, period. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know,
so,
Artest got suspended today, though.
Yeah, I mean, but he was playing like, I mean, that's my man. I like Artest for what he brings, the intangible, but he's playing like trash. So maybe he needs to sit down. You know what I mean? Get your thoughts together, get a quaalude, man, calm down a little bit, go see your psychiatrist, and then get back out there. You know what I mean? Now, the rest of them do, like, in the I'm going to start with the East. I think Miami's playing the best ball. I think they're playing the best ball, but I'm not ready to say they coming out the East yet because I think it's all about matchups, you know what I mean? I think if they play a healthy roles, that could be a problem for them because, you know, it's about, like, if you can slow the game down and make it a half-court game and you got some people on the blocks that can make some baskets, then you can make it hard on them. You know what I mean? But right now they're playing the best ball in the East. And I would say Dallas is playing the best ball in the West.
And if they make it, who take it? Who taking it?
Ooh, that's a hell of a matchup, man.
That's a good matchup. That's not the matchup that the league wants because of money reasons. But that's a good matchup. That's a real good matchup.
No. It's a lot of unanswered questions with that matchup. Like, I don't
matter
know who's going to guard Dirk.
Yeah, matter of fact, don't even answer that because we'll get you back before the
the
final.
Okay.
You know, and if they make it, then we'll get your predictions then. So,
okay.
Yo, we're gonna let you go here, but look, man, we see how passionate you are about sports. We got to get you back on and do a whole show with us one day, man.
Absolutely, man. I can't wait, man.
Look, good looking. Thanks for calling, man. We really appreciate it, and we definitely going to have you back on. So I'll be in touch with you after, you know, I'll be in touch with you probably sometime this week, man.
That's what it is, man. Thank you for having me, and thank you for allowing me. And now that's the Addis Roundtable, man. This was fun. I dug it all the way, you know what I mean?
No doubt. Trey Lee, everybody.
Good luck.
And we're going to go out and eat Ness. All right, Trey.
They call me Esquire, Spitfire, son, the loudest one. Still rep Philadelphia to the fullest. But you may see me in D.C. at Howard Homecoming and see esteemed alumnus. T.D. back, stunning, raps, cunning, impact, humongous. Stuttering, thinking about my persona. I goes hard like Rihanna. I'm a throwback.
All right, Jim. That was up.
Hey,
that was hot,
family. Yeah, that was hot. I had a good time.
We gotta talk about something now.
That song was banging.
Let's get into some serious talk real quick.
Outside of sports, your man OBL, Osama bin Laden. Let me not say your man for people get all Mendenhall on us, but you know, your man Rashard Mendenhall, and we do call him Mendenhall because he sexually assaulted Ben Raffensperger, so we do call him Mendenhall. He sent out a couple tweets and then had subsequent apologies and clarifying what he said. So I just wanted to get everybody's opinion real quick. It's just me, Dev, and Austin now on the whole situation. First of all, the social media aspect of athletes using social media, and also people coming at him the way they came at him. I mean, I know, Austin, you feel very, very, very strong about this, but Dev, what's your opinion?
When Austin did the PTR, he kind of quoted some stuff that I said when we were talking with some people earlier in the week. But before I even get into that, for the people who might have been under a rock for the past week, this is what he said. This is his tweet. He said, quote, "What kind of person celebrates death? It's amazing how people can hate a man that they've never even heard speak." And he said, then he went on to say things like, "We've only heard one side of it." And he kind of got on his little conspiracy thing with everything that happened on 9/11. Now, I kind of think that may have been what sparked a whole lot of people, you know, because what I've heard all week is, you know, well, obviously if you didn't lose somebody in 9/11, then you wouldn't know. But, to be 100 with you, man, I really don't think Rashard Mendenhall said anything wrong. And that's second on the top of the fact that this country is supposed to be founded on the principles of free speech. So, of course, he can say it. I don't understand why people are trying to censor what he said. You may have a problem with it in the long run, but he said what he said. We're allowed to say what we want to say. And I don't know. I mean, it was kind of good for him, really, because when he said it, he had 13,631 Twitter followers. By the next afternoon, 24 hours later, he had 39,914 Twitter followers. So
maybe he's trying to get into what Bill Simmons calls the Tyson zone. You know, when you build up a persona of saying crazy things to the point where, like, it doesn't even matter anymore. You know, he gets later in his career, they're like, oh, that's just Rashard Mendenhall being Rashard Mendenhall. But anyway, before I let Brad go off on this topic.
Like you said, because this is his second time saying something controversial because he defended Adrian Peterson's modern-day slavery comments. But go ahead.
Yeah, what I'm saying is maybe he's building that's his opinion of building his brand as somebody that can say whatever he feels like saying. But I agree with you. It's like you have the right to say whatever you want, and at the same time, people have the right to feel the way they feel. But the way they're talking about now, like trying to take social media away from athletes, I get pissed when they act like athletes are supposed to be just athletes. Like, if you have an opinion, you should be able to express it. Now, if you lose fans or whatever in the process, then so be it. But it's free speech.
You know what I'm saying? And you know, whether I agree with what he said or not, he has the right to say it, but he also has to deal with what comes with it. But, like, some of the stuff I hear, like, the mass media saying is ridiculous. You know, they call him a coward. I mean, I heard people actually calling him names because of what he said. I'm like, come on, man, what is that?
It's not even just the mass media, though, man. People that I've spoken to all week, man, everybody's on their self-righteous American thing. And, you know, I try not to get out there, especially because we were on a sports forum. I'm trying not to put myself out there too much because I'm not trying to make us lose fans because of my political views. But, you know, like with Austin read earlier, the quote from me where I was telling people, okay, first of all, you know, I'm a spiritual dude. I wouldn't call myself a religious dude, even though when it dropped, I kind of threw up the Proverbs up there trying to tell people that they shouldn't be celebrating anybody's death, no matter who it is. And I can't bring myself to do that. Like I said, I'm not overly religious. I just call myself spiritual. So I can't bring myself to celebrate anybody's death, no matter what they did. But everybody goes on to tell us, you know, how big of a villain Bin Laden was. And I hear that. I don't disagree with it. But at the same time, like I said in Austin's quote, people just don't wake up in the morning and pick America's, you know, pick a piece of paper out of a hat that says America in it and do what they did on 9/11. Nobody ever stops to think about what, you know, what kind of egregious acts have been done upon these people for the 30 or so years that we've been occupying the Middle East. And I don't want to get into my whole preaching and political thing, but everybody wants to admit it knows that our civilian body count throughout the years that we've occupied the Middle East is way more than what happened to us on 9/11.
Come on, man. First off, let's get real. I'm going to tell y'all something that's going to piss everybody off. Yo, Bin Laden don't exist anywhere, yo. He was the boogeyman they created to piss us all off. Yo, those pictures you see, that's not Bin Laden. That's Tony Dungy wearing a costume. But anyway. you want to say anything about this, Austin?
Yeah, you already know. That's why I've been silent and listening, that this segment of the show is protected by the red, the black, and the green with the key in the middle. And so what I wanted to get to is, are inalienable rights to free speech within the country, the United States of America? And I think that the founding fathers of this country created or pushed that right to allow for people with profound thoughts, sharp tongues, and the courage to speak up and speak their mind to be catalysts for conversations like this and to help others see certain things. Because free speech allows for us to listen to our fellow citizen and gain something from it. Now, sure, some of the people that utilize that right to free speech say things that aren't worth listening to, but it's still within their rights. I think that Mendenhall really touched on some very profound points that, you know, strike a chord with people because they're not really analyzing what he's saying. And to touch on a spiritual point, you know, we build up this country as a Christian country. And I'm not going to go, you know, too much further than that, but it does say to love thy enemy. And what part of the game is running into the streets and jumping up and down at a man's death when that's what your enemy does? So, in essence, you're not better than your enemy.
That's the thing, Austin, because a lot of people were saying, well, you know, after they knocked the towers down, they had footage on the internet of everybody celebrating in the streets of what they had just done to America.
And
my point to everybody was, if you're telling me that right now, then it obviously pissed you off. So if that kind of thing pisses you off and you think that's savage behavior, why would we do the same thing? Even if they killed,
right,
if you had to kill the man, you had to kill the man. Do what you got to do. But
then be better than the people you claim are savages.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yo, but to bring it back to, like, sports, the reason he didn't really, like, say, he didn't really apologize for his statements or retract them. He just apologized for anybody hurt. But at the same time, you do remember Chris Jackson, a.k.a. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, who was a bad player. He used to give out 40 like it's nothing. And also Craig Hodges, they got blackballed from the game. And
yo.
Wasn't that Craig Hodges show up to the 3-point contest on like a white tee? Because he didn't handle squad.
Yeah, great tee. It was dirty. It was a dirty great tee.
The rules were that, you know, they had to let you defend your crown. So the dude had on like a t-shirt.
No. He got a $30,000 check for that, and that's the last professional check he got.
But he got blackballed from the game, and so they like Mahmoud, and Mahmoud was nice.
Yeah,
Mahmoud continued to play. In fact, he played up until last season in Saudi Arabia.
Yo, you see how Craig Hodges is a shooting coach. He's a shooting coach with the Lakers. But he can't travel with the team. I don't know if he can't travel with the team or they don't let him travel, but that's crazy.
Yo, you see what I'm saying?
That
and that's
crazy.
What I'm saying. Like, come on, man. So
Mendenhall
had to, like, say something.
Brother Ben, we need you to weigh in.
Okay, yeah, I mean.
Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, you know, I think it's definitely wrong to celebrate somebody's death. You know, I was talking to friends of mine from church about that, and it's just kind of like, you know, it is contradictory to be like, yeah, I'm Christian, you know, I want to follow or try to follow what Jesus says to my best of my abilities, but you know, I'm a cheer that you know, somebody died regardless of who it is, because even the Apostle Paul himself killed Christians before he converted to become a Christian. So imagine you're a Christian worshiping with Paul, who just killed your family back in the day. You see what I'm saying? I think they put that in there for a reason, to show us how deep our forgiveness level has to go. So that's all.
And the cheering, really, really, everybody's, you know, it's symbolic to me. Everybody's cheering the symbolism of it because, you know, if you're naive enough to think because they killed Osama bin Laden that terrorism is over, then, you know, frankly, I'm just going to be frank, you're just stupid. Because in any instance, you know, if it's a family situation where a father dies and, you know, his oldest son got to step up to the plate, you know, I was joking with Naran the other day. I was like, you know, when Mufasa dies, Simba got to step up to the plate. When Drew Bledsoe went down, Tom Brady stepped up to the plate and they became better than ever. So to think just because we supposedly killed bin Laden that's going to, you know, cause this big blow.
Come on, man. Exactly. What do they think is going to happen?
I don't believe
Ricky Baker died, Doughboy had to do his thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, how do we know that the second in command wasn't, you know, making side deals with the Peruvians like G-Money? They might have wanted him gone. Like, somebody might be willing, ready to step up. I mean, I just.
Yo, that second in command might have snitched to get my man knocked off so that they could step in. Yo, you know what it is.
Yo, that was actually one of my speculations, but I'm gonna keep it serious here. Yeah, I just think the whole thing is a symbolic thing for everybody. I mean, but there are the few out there who really think that like something was really accomplished.
Whenever you think about the understanding that we have of terrorist cells and how they work, you know, kind of independent of one another. By killing Osama bin Laden, really by virtue of what we understand of terrorist cells, it does nothing but actually incite the beast. So for me personally, and this is just my personal views and not the view of the war room, so I'll set that disclaimer out there, I think that it may even go haywire within another few months as these folks try to retaliate based on what they perceive to be his martyrdom.
Yeah,
so.
But the government knows that because as soon as it happened, all the, you know, the alerts went up and, you know, everything's at a high level now, even though they changed the little scale to orange and red, all that. Whatever they do now, all the alerts went up and everybody's on the lookout because retaliation,
they,
I mean, that's what it is, you know. They
yeah,
do something,
I mean,
they saw
boys in the hood.
Yeah.
I mean, even because, you know, what's going to happen is some cats are going to fall back from terrorism, you know what I mean, like. Yeah, I mean, like, Trey, you're going to get out the car or whatever, but Doughboy's still going to do what he got to do.
You're stupid. Well, hey, look, so just to wrap it all up, man, Mendenhall just exercises free speech. Y'all leave that man alone because you say what you want to say, so let him say what he wants to say.
I saw what he did to Big Ben, so go back to fighting for same-sex marriages, Mendenhall. And with that, I'm going to take us out of here. Thanks, everybody, for joining us in the War Room this evening. We hope you enjoyed tonight's show. Special thanks to tonight's guest, Rob Parker from ESPN, and the rapper Trey Lee Esquire. That was a great guest. Tune in next week, same time, same place, for another great episode of the War Room. And as usual, we're doing what we do, which is getting you caught up in sports. So tune in next week and every week. You can listen to us on our apps, mobile apps, iPhone, Android. So go listen to us there. And, you know, you don't want to miss it. Happy Cinco de Mayo to all our Mexican amigos, and happy Mother's Day.
Uh-oh, the Mother's Day to all the mothers. Swag is back, my bad, the graduates back. Who half of you cats tried to
rest in
back.
Peace, mommy.
Got a patent on that. It's the cash, it's a rap, yo. The reenactment, in fact, is who you think it is. The same trade from back in the gap. It's the mean and the lack. My mom provides a breeze in my lap. I've been doing what you're doing. I ain't happy with that. Massive 30-year-old Scott, and I done had it with Jack. Y'all only win it cause I had it with rap. 4 minutes been whacked. 4 minutes, so I'm back in business to distribute. A float is finished. Hey, I still do that. Haters and critics, you name it, I've been through that. Damn, the game is a trip, ain't it? I can't dispute that. All I can do is laugh, cause I don't even know the half. Change a thing of the past, now I wouldn't assume that. I took their best shot, boom. Now it's my turn to shoot back. Clack, clack, clack. I still do that. This shit right here is sad. I still do that. Lyrically there, delivery's rare. Oh yeah, I'm spitting with flair. Y'all wasn't prepared. See, I say what they don't say cause they scared. With folks been waiting ahead. That's why they've been raving for Trey like McNair. Oh yeah, attorney get law. But let me be clear, I'm still an animal with these bars. Embrace the idea. And I got a God-given gift, so God willing I swear I'll be rhyming to the day I'm singing hi to Aaliyah. To the lies are revealed. These youngins need a better model, you dig? To get accustomed, I ain't going nowhere. I'm in a custom fly to live. Of course I still rap, but now I broke up my deals and they can't stand that. Not one to discuss my fears, but fully aware. At least two of your favorite rappers that still owe me some bread. But in lieu of a dispute with my peers, I'd rather garnish the map with product that's crack. I still do that, y'all should clap.